I don't know how to play, and I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my.
Hello and welcome to the National Institute for Gamer Review. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and I have watched this movie in 0.5 seconds on 100x speed, so I think I held the record.
Is that like a YouTube thing?
No, it's a speed running reference. I'm sure somebody has done speed running the Mario
that's
movie.
Clever. Yeah, I saw they were doing a thing on Twitter where they were just like, because Elon made it so you could just upload, not quite arbitrary long, but like two, I think up to 2 hours if you pay him $8 a month. So people were just like putting movies on Twitter. I'm sure somebody put the, of course, that gets copyright struck or whatever. But yes, today we are discussing the fairly recently released still Super Mario movie, which I think there's a couple different angles to discuss it from. You do not, unlike me, have small children. What was your reaction?
I would first of all say, to cover my bases, I would not have watched this had you not told me to watch it, I had no real interest in this, but I did watch it because I found a stolen copy of it on the ground. I watched a kid's movie. It's just like, there were some interesting things maybe, but like, it was just like any early 2000s kids movie. They had the popular music soundtrack. They had the kind of implied fart jokes and such. There was the voice actors that are, otherwise very, very famous.
I was about to say Chris Rock. Chris, I forget which of the Chris's. The Guardians Pratt. Of the Galaxy, Pratt, thank you, yes. And Jack Black, I think, are the two highest profile. Who played Peach?
It was somebody.
Yeah, I'm sure it was somebody. I'll take a look while you're filibustering.
But I don't know. I was not as blown away. I am, of course, a bit more cynical. I do not view much product these days outside of the YouTube algorithm giving me old clips of scenes from The Wire that I like, which it I guess has decided that's the way the algorithm will de-radicalize me, because instead of Jordan Peterson clips didn't work, but like racist clips from The Wire do work in distracting me from just trying to watch a goddamn Keith Woods video. And sure.
So apparently Princess Peach was played by Anya Taylor-Joy, which doesn't mean anything to me, but I guess she was the Queen's Gambit.
The Northman. Yeah,
she was in Northman too. I heard that was
the
good.
GF.
I never saw it.
Yeah. Slavic GF.
She has very striking like Nordic features, for sure. So.
She's also she's a Spaniard, I believe, from Argentina. Mm-hmm. She also had the weird like fat removal surgery from the face. You've seen that?
Okay, I didn't know. Well, her cheeks yeah, like are they, super. Yeah.
Well, they removed like she was. She had more normal. She had more normal cute features, and now she has like more striking there's this buccal fat removal surgery where they like remove it from the upper cheek. It's very weird.
That's extremely disturbing. I was about to say.
Yeah, no, everything's fake. Beauty is can be manufactured with enough money and time. So we live in hell. But she's very famous. She is like incongruously famous to be in one of these roles, I guess, which makes sense. It was also like a reference. I felt in the most positive way to look at it was like how I imagine parents watching like Looney Tunes in Wood, where there's like pretty, there's relatively constant references to both like older media and just like just lots of stuff. Like there's lots of just references to things.
It was pretty much an Easter egg a minute, just about, as far as if you've been playing, if you're a millennial or thereabouts who's been playing.
But even just like that wasn't even all video games. It was just like shots from, I think it was like Rocky stuff. There was, you know.
Oh yeah, sure. That kind of, yeah.
It was just doing, there was a lot of it was like video game stuff. There's just a lot of just,
although
generic nostalgia.
Looney Tunes would have references to like Wagner and shit, right?
And like the Bible, yes. But like, you know, so just live in a fallen world, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I enjoyed it. I don't want to be able to like too huge brain, but like, I don't have kids. So like, I do like Jack Black. I think he's funny, which I think puts me a minority in the white national sphere. But
I'm with you on that one. Yeah,
all that you know, him like thrashing on a guitar and being funny. I find that stuff actually amusing. So I enjoyed that element of this. I did like that. Like it was that of him doing. I don't know. He's always kind of doing Meatloaf, but.
So
he was
for those
very
of you haven't
doing
seen the movie and have no intention, Jack Black plays is the voice of Bowser. So
but it's Bowser being he is playing Meatloaf, playing Bowser, like Meatloaf the musician. It's very as more direct than it's been. He's always been kind of playing Meatloaf, but he just goes. He's it's very. And also ironic, unironically, I enjoy a Meatloaf song or two. So
right,
you know. So I enjoyed the musical element, like the. Which is funny for like usually it's the worst part of a movie when they break out into song. It's the movie's not musical,
laughing.
But
no,
like,
it was definitely the highlight. We'll get into that in a second, maybe.
I think there is a distance that animation creates that watching humans do a musical number is kind of always cringe.
It's kind of inherently cringe.
It's very hard not to be, right?
Yeah.
But watching CGI things. Do this is
well, especially
you know.
When it's like it's intentionally cringe. Well, I want to get to that in a second because I found that not just like the most funny, the funniest part of the movie, but I think the kind of to the extent that we could talk about, you know, essentially kids' entertainment based on essentially disposable video game as art, the most kind of artistically really powerful part of the film. But yeah, I wouldn't say blown away. I did think it was really good. I thought the production quality was very high. All the kind of technical aspects were very well done.
You could see the money. You could see the money being spent on screen.
Yes.
It was better than like a... It was on par with a Pixar in terms of money spent. It was probably better than DreamWorks.
Better than Pixar. Most Pixar stuff. I mean, I guess I haven't seen that much
I'm
recently.
Probably thinking, I'm thinking Golden Era Pixar. I haven't seen recent Pixar because I'm not a homosexual. So like, I'm not literally trying to groom a child to be gay. So
on,
I haven't shown
like
a lot
on
of
a
Pixar
related
film.
Note, you know, so we're recording this in June of 2023, and there are not one but two Disney films out because of the kind of constant
the
marketing.
Can you
but
prove
also
that? I have. I'm not
well,
even.
That's what I'm
I
saying.
Didn't
it's
know.
Like, I would
oh wait,
know,
no, the mermaid one, the
mermaid one, I would know about the other one.
Oh,
I would
from
not.
Twitter.
Apparently
you mean the one from Twitter?
Exactly, the memes with the girl with the weird eyes. Yeah.
Yes,
but the there's apparently a new Pixar film. I as a like the target number one target demographic of like you know take your kids to see new Pixar product. I literally wouldn't know this movie existed if I didn't read Hollywood trade publications to A-log Disney. Like if I weren't a Disney A-log, and I still don't know what the movie's about or anything about it, other than there's apparently a new Pixar film called Elemental that I guess has something to do with like element, like the fire element. I saw like a character that looked like a fire elemental from a video game. So I assume
know about like the idea of the elements outside of like from watching Avatar The Last Airbender. I feel like that's as a cultural touchstone never mentioned outside of other TV shows doing a thing on
it. If you're like into, I mean, I'm into, you know, Asian culture and Buddhism and stuff, and Buddhism, it is actually kind of important, but apart from that, and you know, maybe because I'm a nerd and it also comes up in Aristotle. No, you know, and in terms of, as a cultural touchstone reference. Yes. If you're not like, you know, earth, water, wind, fire from like a video game or an anime or something like,
or the hit 70s band.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Please go on.
Well, why was fire not in that band? It was Earth, Wind, and Fire. Air.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Air not in the band.
Yeah, right.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. No, water. That's retarded.
Water is
where's the water?
Wind would be air, and yeah. Anyway, so I did quite enjoy the film. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I understand why people are jaded and cynical, and it's not even that I disagree, like, as far as the bar being so low for, like, if a movie isn't woke, that, you know, quote unquote, that's enjoyable at some level. But it was definitely refreshing for me to have essentially just harmless and entertainment that wasn't ideologically insulting or offensive. That was just a breath of fresh air. And yes, as a millennial or you know, whatever, who has been playing Mario games since the original Nintendo, it was very I don't know, it was heartwarming in a certain kind of a way. They know how to hit you in those feels. I saw a quote. So I don't want to spend too much time kind of analyzing it structurally, because it's not much to analyze. But the thing that struck me was watching it. So it starts being played super straight. Essentially, is a kind of CGI version of the old live action series, or I guess there was a live action movie that was a total disaster for like Dennis Quaid or something. And then there was a like a kind of hybrid live action skits with cartoon, which is where a lot of those kind of early YouTube poops come from. And it was sort of like, and in those two, the live action previous attempts, there was a kind of like trying to play to some extent straight the idea that these are plumbers in Brooklyn who something, 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 now we're in the Mushroom Kingdom. That was like the kind of frame for the first, I don't know, 20 minutes of the movie or something. And then it just, I wouldn't say that it exactly goes off the rails. It just kind of like, I don't know, because there was never really rails for it to be on. It's just kind of like a, yeah, I mean, the critique that I know the tedious guys had, or Sven in particular, I don't think Alex or Mike saw it, was that it's just like watching someone play a Mario game, which is true. There were sequences like that. But I think more it was just kind of there was only maybe two or three sequences where the kind of camera panned out and you're watching them essentially do a side-scrolling level. Other than that, it was sort of like, you know, it was more traditional cinematic angles and camera work just on this just total like acid trip of like they stopped trying to play it as though, okay, there's, you know, there's a struggling plumbing business with these two brothers with these ridiculous, because that was the other thing, I guess, in those previous live action attempts were essentially like late 80s, early 90s type products. So the idea that you're going to have ethnic Italians with giant mustaches and overalls in Brooklyn wasn't inherently ridiculous. In the current year, it's just a kind of obvious anachronism, and they don't try to set it in 1980. Well,
like,
whatever.
They did like, but the demographics of Brooklyn were very white relative to like reality, which is very interesting.
Yes, that's true. That's in the movie. Yes, yeah, yes. Much whiter than reality. Yes, but they even had. I mean, it was like it was kind of. I don't know. I think it was in some ways the worst shot of the film, but you understand what they were trying to do. Or the worst scene was they had like, so Mario and Luigi are like, rather than being middle-aged, which is the kind of other interesting thing about it. Cause in the old live action stuff, they were like pot-belly middle-aged dudes, which is sort of what kind of like truer to the original lore. In this, they're kind of like, I guess, early 20s, striking out on their own. And they're an embarrassment to their parents, or to the paterfamilias of this kind of very over the top, you know, Italian, like Sicilian meatball, literal like spaghetti and meatball dinner in their Brooklyn apartment. It's a weird kind of anachronism thing, but you understand. I mean, the funny part about it to me was not intentionally funny. It was just that they're like, on the one hand, trying to tell this story in something that's going to approximate a serious way, but they only do it for like a half hour out of the hour and a half or whatever runtime, like in fits and start, like the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then the next hour of the movie, or 45 minutes is just kind of whatever. It's, you know, Mario winds up in the castle in the kingdom, and there's Toad and there's Princess Peach, and there's just a bunch. And oh, the the decision that left me the most, that was when I sort of felt, I was like, okay, this is just, you know, a ride and I'm along for it, is when, because up until, like, for the first, they play it straight, and then he arrives in the Mushroom Kingdom, and they don't exactly play it straight, but it's kind of becomes an adventure story. And then Mario gets his, there's a obstacle course. Princess Peach is essentially like, okay, if you want to come with me.
This is actually what I also realized this movie was when they kick on to Bonnie Tyler's Holding Out for a Hero. And I realized, right. They're just doing license. Oh, okay, this is what we're doing. It says that was like, right. It takes itself not seriously, but like until that point, it's like makes a certain amount of internal sense. There's some dumb stuff. Like there's a literal like eat your vegetables bit.
Yes.
Like Mario doesn't like the taste of mushrooms, but they make him sure. Oh my, which was like, I guess like this is a kids movie. We're checking the box. You know, eat your veggies, kids. Sure. But then like when they do like the Bonnie Tyler like montage, like, oh, I guess we're doing. It just, this movie doesn't act as if it doesn't actually like, you know,
mad. It's not like, intending to make sense. No, it's just, it's like the Rocky training montage with the Shrek song, except for he's like his training, quote unquote, is there's like a clue box that gives him a magic mushroom that makes him grow big for like no reason. And the explanation, like it's kind of deadpan. The camera looks to Princess Peach and she's like, these are our power-ups. They give us powers. It's like, okay, then I guess that's.
And there are a bunch of scenes like that where it'll be like Take on Me or Thunder, like they will just have like popular music hit and like then it kind of just like wipes your brain of like anything, like, which I guess is like good to a degree. It's like, oh, this is right, this is a movie, this is kind of dumb, like, and they'll, it's pretty frequent, they'll be like, all right, so we need to move the plot along, they go to the like Mario's getting his ass beat by Donkey Kong, and then like I believe Thunderstruck
but it was some popular song
plays, yeah. And then Mario wins the fight, moving right along the story.
Yeah, moving right along, yes. So the reason why I talk about it, it really kind of almost doesn't have. I mean, it sort of has a plot, but really just doesn't. Is apparently I saw a quote. I don't know how true it is, but it definitely sounds true. With Shigeru Miyamoto, where he was basically the initial drafts of the script tried to play it straight and actually have, you know, a plot with the three-act structure and all this kind of stuff. And he's like, no, this is just make it like the game. Like there's no, like, don't do that. Like this is a Mario game, you know, the game doesn't have a plot really, and neither should the movie. I think it works for that, because if you do the stupid superhero origin story thing, which it kind of worked in like the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, and hasn't really worked since then, I think, or maybe like the first Christopher Nolan Batman. Michael Keaton Batman, I think, worked for, but it wasn't an origin story, right?
I think people like origin stories don't matter. Like if you say, right, like, it's me, I'm the super, I'm Mario, it's like,
right, I'm me. Oh. Yeah.
The audience then realizes that's Mario or that's Batman,
yeah,
or that's,
there's no reason for that. Yeah. There's just, it would have been, it would, you can understand the kind of the logic behind it. And I think that was the right call. At the downside, yes, if it's just sort of bright colors and loud sounds for a while, but at a certain level, so is the source material. And, you know, what I found the most interesting, and this is what we were talking about before, was, and this is where I do think the film broke some new ground in the Mario cinematic universe, is in its portrayal of Bowser and its exploration of his psychosexual motivations for kidnapping Princess Peach, this is kind of an interesting thing that's been, I think, in the background of a lot of the two things that come up for me. That I think of what sort of immediately popped to mind was, first of all, Braid, which I think discussed. We didn't do an episode, maybe we'll do an indie games or something, but Braid is very, very self-conscious about its it's a side-scrolling platformer, you know, 2D that's consciously modeled on Mario, but doing different stuff. And the kind of key conceit of the, you know, spoilers for a 15-year-old indie game, is like you're your beloved has been abducted, right? And you're, you know, chasing after her. Except for, and the whole game is about like time and you use the manipulation of time to like solve the puzzles and advance through the levels. The last level of Braid, you know, kind of famously, the gameplay conceit is you can move time backwards and that's how you're solving puzzles and the other versus like freezing time and other things you can do in other levels. In the last level of Braid, you can move time backwards. And when you finally get to the end of the game and you are reunited with your beloved, actually she's running away from you. And you, when you move time backwards through the level to like solve the final puzzle of the game, you see your actions in reverse and you see yourself, you are the monster that has been abducting or chasing after this woman who's trying to get away from you for her own, like essentially physical safety. And it, you know, okay, it's a little basic, but it definitely hits. At least it hit. I mean, it provides a kind of, it's like, it answers a question that the Mario games never bother answering. Like everybody understands a damsel in distress kind of storyline, but it was even a meme like on Reddit and shit, even before Braid, which I think was kind of in some ways a response to this meme joke of like, why is it that the princess keeps getting abducted? Like, you know, if a princess gets abducted once, like you can understand. If a princess gets abducted like 9 times, you know, if in 9 different castles, you got to go after her. Like, what's really going on? You know, what's going on there? Which is the second kind of reference point for that was there's a funny. So there's in the I think it was in I forget when Bowser Jr. was introduced. It might have been what's the Super Soaker one? The one for GameCube that was also the only Mario game that had like zero everything else, you know, from 1, 2, 3 and the Nintendo.
Oh, Sunshine?
Sunshine, thank you. Yes. Sunshine, I think there was like one sign somewhere in the background that referenced like the cleaning company from Sunshine that Mario was like cleaning stuff up with his squirt gun. Other than that, it was completely absent from noted. There was no, you know, anyway.
There are so many Mario games that like
yes.
There were lots of things that only got one thing. Yeah,
but I didn't even notice. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But the point is there's a line in because there's a Bowser Jr. character, right? There's like Bowser Sr. and Bowser Jr. Okay, well, who is Bowser Jr.'s mom? And Bowser Jr. at some point in Sunshine apparently says that Princess Peach is his mom, which I guess it ends up not being true or something. I don't think the question goes back to being unanswered. But like how is there a Bowser Jr. If Bowser Sr. is his dad, he has to have a mom. And if Bowser keeps abducting Princess Peach, you kind of understand. You're like, what does he want her for exactly? And you know, in the Nintendo games, the original Nintendo games, it's just sort of like, well, Mario, that doesn't exactly need a motivation, you know, but he needs a reason to push right on the directional pad to keep moving through the level. You know, there's a princess that needs saving is kind of as good of a reason as any. And there's no real reason to, you know, okay, there's a princess who needs saving from some like dragon dinosaur thing, whatever. Okay, but now the dragon dinosaur thing has like kidnapped the princess multiple times. And, you know, what, why? Why? What does he want with her? And the movie's answer to this question is that he's deeply in love with her. And not only that's what does love mean, right? But in any case, that he wants to marry her. And there's the by far, I think the funniest.
Wait, oh gosh, should I make the joke that like he's doing the like America First bit where they have to have the church wedding and like he's obsessed over it? Like,
yes, no, 100%. Yeah. Like, he can't. Like it's funny because like Bowser will burn down kingdoms for the sake of Princess Peach.
You say like Bowser Bowser being an incel is like kind of a cringe thing, but he's literally like, doing a very I don't think this is intentional doing a very like you know trad cath view of like a relationship where you coerce a woman into a wedding.
Genocide is fine, but rape is like beyond the pale. Yes.
He's not trying to get laid. He's trying to get married, which is very kind
exactly. He wants her to love him. Like that's the yes, and it's when in it. Yeah. Sorry. Go on.
Well, also, so this is where I have my, like, I'm going to out right-wing everybody. So the normie take is that, like, because they're trying, it's Bowser, it's Peach and Mario trying to rescue Luigi. And that's like, oh, that's, you know, a feminist narrative. My take is that actually the true and proper right-wing reaction to the Bowser trying to genocide the whole kingdom to marry Peach would just be to just marry Bowser. Like, that's the actual base trad right-wing thing, which is like, well, you just marry the invading king and
declare peace. There's a warlord who, like, was going to burn down your kingdom unless you are his war bride. Like, you just fucking...
You just got to merge the kingdoms, then and then you guys conquer the rest of the known universe, apparently. Then you conquer the Donkey Kong area. I don't know. Like, do whatever. You know, whatever. But, I find the Bowser stuff, it's also just, it is very funny. Incel Bowser, as like cringe as
it was a very true to life portrayal, and they even did the kind of the bit of, like, you know, his number one, his right hand henchman, the wizard guy, you know, is like puts on like a wig and he's practicing his pickup lines on his best bro, who's like, you know, he's helping him. It's pathetic and it's cringe, but in a very funny and deliberately funny way, and it works very well. And I found just all of the and when Jack Black does the crooning Meatloaf broken heart solo bit on the piano, I was fucking dying. I just couldn't.
No, it's legitimately, because like that kind of music is, I don't know, because obviously this is not,
it's inherently
sincere,
ridiculous, but it's often so self-serious. Like,
it's sincerity core. That's what you would, like, if you was to call it something. Meatloaf is sincerity core, and even doing it insincerely, it's still like it, at a certain point, it, like, the music is so well produced, and it kind of like pianos are kind of cheating in that they'll kind of tug at your heartstrings inherently. Like pianos are good at that. Violins and pianos inherently kind of activate something within you that takes something seriously, right? And that's when they wanted to put the best part of this movie, and I know it's because they spent a shitload of money on it, is the soundtrack. Like, there's a lot of like licensed, like, dumb music in it. Or not dumb, just popular music. Like, the Beastie Boys are in the movie, you know, and that's dumb or whatever. But there's like also very sincere, like, I mean, John Williams-esque music. Like, there's very sincere soundtracks and characters have motifs and themes and stuff, and like you can say like, oh, like it's orchestral and there's voices and, you know, strings, all this very, like, the music in this, that, like, that's if you were trying to, like, oh, like, be a huge brand enjoyer of thing, like, the actual music in this is very well made, and, you know, to some degree you can just make that kind of John Williams music with just pouring money into something, and like you pay enough composers and enough orchestras, you get something good, because that's just because there are talented people that are just expensive. But I really did enjoy the, outside of the funny stuff, which is also good, and, you know, I like those popular songs, I like the funny Jack Black stuff, but the actual, like, soundtrack is very good. It's
I think all those, again, like the all of the aesthetic direction elements, also visually, you know, I found it quite striking. There was a large variety of environments, but they're all rendered well, and, you know, high levels of detail. And the soundtrack too, for sure, was I mean, all you know, it's, they did, as I think, as good a job as can be done on the technical side throughout. And it was interesting. The kind of, we were talking about Pixar before. I don't want to talk about too much about the politics of the movie, because first of all, it's boring, and also, it's just kind of been done to death, and also, who cares? It's just, yeah, okay, whatever. Princess Peach is she's not even like ass kicking exactly. There's a little bit of a strong women thing, but I don't know. It was so like
Mario is Luke, the mighty whitey in the movie, though. He comes in and is better at everything, like, which is interesting. Like, he's just better because he's like a white guy. If you want to do a take on this movie, you can do a take. It's dumb to have a take on it, but you could do a take.
But what I was going to say real quick, and then we can, I want to move on, but is Illumination is the studio, right? Which also did the Minions movies and Despicable Me and some other stuff. it's notable to me that, like, again, I mean, have you seen any of the Despicable Me movies?
So
the second one in particular is, I think, to me, it's kind of a very similar vibe as far as the strong women bit, because there you have, you know, the central main character is a kind of nebulously Eastern European, probably goyish, white guy. And he has this like redhead that they end up, you know, meeting, and she becomes the adoptive mother of his adoptive daughters. And she is a fellow secret agent. And I guess in both the second and the third movie, but it's especially played up in the second, that she, you know, she does the karate princess bit. And I don't know, it was a similar, it's an interesting thing, because apart from that, so also in the second Despicable Me movie, which again is made by this, it's Illumination, the same studio that made the Mario movie. The central villain is this kind of hilariously over the top Mexican, he's like a luchador kind of thing. And it's very, you know, he's very stereotypically Mexican. His Mexican identity is a part of his villain identity as kind of this villainous luchador wrestler guy. And nobody cares. And I haven't looked for them. I wonder if there are any. I presume there must be some kind of, Jewish media critique of Despicable Me 2 as offensive to Hispanics because something, something, something. But it's interesting, just as a kind of, just looking at the kind of the professional aspects of it, or the industry aspects of it, how Illumination as a studio with this, I think, is a real displacing Pixar, right? Is kind of where I'm going with this.
Yes, there's that, but also there's one thing I think it's kind of unspoken, and Hollywood actually finds it. I think Hollywood's kind of embarrassed by it, but like the actually most financially successful films, the most sure bets, are films for children. Like children's films are generally a lockdown. Like you're gonna double your money; it's almost guaranteed. And you know, all these like kids' movies are actually like stupid expensive. All this computer animation is expensive. Like they're really expensive to make. That's why like they can have these A-list actors, because the like compared to, you know, 6 years or whatever it is of CGI animation, like, you know, paying Chris Pratt for a couple weeks is like nothing, right? So they can have these big actors, and there's no reason to. And I think, you know, Illumination and DreamWorks to a certain extent are kind of just doing like basically if we can just do like pretty much apolitical children's movies,
they'll make bank.
They all cost $100 million to make, and they all make us $300 million plus. That's just a model. Like that's a model to make a lot of money.
Yeah,
not even relatively fast compared to like, you know, any other kind of investment. So there's no reason these ever to stop. And also, wasn't the first Despicable Me villain like kind of nebulously gay and Jewish? He's got like Woody Allen glasses. The big nose is like a cartoon character thing, but he has like the bowl cut and like the problem.
He definitely had like a little bit of a gay vibe for sure. In the first film, and the main villain, and his dad was the banker for like the evil global mega bank.
Yes, so there was a very Jewish aspect to that guy, but also they pay off, like, you know, it's a huge Hollywood thing. I'm sure the Jews like are willing to just make a bunch of money off of this thing versus.
Yeah. And it's not exactly, I mean, there's a point at which, you know, they don't like Disney for now doesn't need money, but other people do, you know, there are Jews who like making money, right? It's not that they all have so much money that they don't care whether they make money or lose it. It was just noteworthy. I was just thinking about like the kind of industry side politics of Disney, you know, because everybody's now becoming a Disney A-log or watching this corporation implode, and what used to be really essentially synonymous with the highest tier quality of children's animation is now definitely number three after Illumination and DreamWorks in that order. Kind of interesting as an outside observer.
Yeah, well, also, like, the biggest movies for kids aren't, like, kids' animation anymore. It's Marvel shit.
That was
Disney. Like, Cape Shit is bigger than kids' movies, even though it is kids. It has,
but
like...
That's, But I don't know how big their kid audience is compared to their kid old. I'm sure it's there.
Parents don't give a shit. Parents will take their kids to the Star Wars. They'll take them to the to the Hulks. Like, it's all, you know, it's whatever. And I think parents also would prefer to watch, you know, the Marvel shit as well. That's like the layers of the crossover.
Although I do feel like the Marvel stuff now, I mean, I guess we'll see, but it really feels completely played. Nobody's gonna go watch like little black girl Iron Man. Like, give me a fucking break. That's just not like, no one's gonna care. Well, America. It just doesn't.
I agree with you, but like you can course correct for that so easily, right? It's like, oh, we're bringing back the Robert Downey Jr. You know, he's back, and then
you could bring back a white guy. I don't know if you can bring back Robert Downey Jr. I don't know that he'd be interested, and I don't know that he'd be able. You know, or maybe he could for a one-off or something, but you'd still need a new Iron Man, right?
I mean,
like, who wants to watch? Boomers will go watch. What was that movie? Space Cowboys. It was like a bunch of like boomer guys who used to be like the alpha, like Clint Eastwood and shit or whatever. Tommy Lee Jones, like and that came out in the 90s, I think. And that was it was a joke even then, because it was like, look at these former action heroes who are now old guys being kind of quasi action heroes as old guys. But like, when was that might have been the last Tommy Lee Jones movie, right? Does anybody listen to this? Who even knows who Tommy Lee Jones is? You know, I don't think Zoomers would.
I just don't think there's any physical, like, to play Iron Man, he's not actually doing the things, you know, like,
yeah, sure.
He just does the quips. You have the mask on, you know, I think it's fine. Like, I don't think Marvel will ever die because there's a studio that only makes, like, this is getting, like, meta stuff with Hollywood. When like Hollywood would do a bunch of westerns or a bunch of bank robbery, like when they get in some kind of trend and then they get bored of it, they didn't like spin up a studio. Like, if there was a studio that was just making high budget westerns or whatever, or like Apocalypse movies. Remember when Apocalypse movies were big in like the early 2010s?
Absolutely. Like,
Day the Earth Stood Still, The Day After Tomorrow, 2012, all that stuff. But those ended, right? But if you created a studio that was like Apocalypse Movie Studio, we'd still see those movies. And I think that's what Marvel Studio is. Like, they're only ever going to make Marvel movies. They're not ever going to make anything else. Like, we you know, same with, Lucasfilm, like with Star Wars. Like, it's never going to end. I don't know why people think, like, oh, audience will tire of it. Like, no, they won't. They'll just make
I think our first clout challenge disagreement. I absolutely think I think people are already tired of Star Wars.
It doesn't matter. They won't stop, and they'll keep breaking even plus 50%, 15%, 25% for movies. For a movie to be so, like, if you look at a movie like Little Mermaid, right? They spent like, I think, 210, and they probably made like 225. A 2-year investment that makes you a 110% back is really, really good, especially at that scale and size. Like, movies are fine, and then they also make money in perpetuity. Like,
yeah, no, that's a tedious take about, like, it's not, no, like, they're not making this movie for now, they're making this movie for
that's how 20 years from economics now. Of film works is that you just gotta break even, and then you're good.
Yeah
Like, that's what a bomb means, or a failure is just when you don't break even. And you can make these things break even. They will lower the budgets first before they stop making it.
Yes, that's definitely a safe bet. Yes.
Yeah, I think you'll see. You probably won't spend, like, they'll probably cap at like $80 to $120 million instead of doing these insane like $200 Ant-Man sequel. Yeah, like, that's gonna stop for sure. That's like they may fade from like the golden era, but I guarantee you, in 10 years, we're discussing Marvel fade. We're not discussing it, but. There are people discussing Marvel Phase.
We'll have to check back. You know, remind me of this tweet in 10 years.
Yeah.
I wanted to pivot a little, but kind of actually to segue, because we're talking about Marvel and, you know, obviously the Marvel Cinematic Universe. One of the I think interesting things about the Mario film was the way it essentially I don't know how to describe it. I guess it
teased a Mario cinematic universe.
Well, it reveals that there kind of already was, but nobody thought of it that way. And of course, now in the wake of Marvel, where everything's a cinematic universe, it just makes a certain degree of obvious sense. I think the most noteworthy part of it to me was how the Donkey Kong cinematic universe and the Mario cinematic universe are the same cinematic universe, which is deep lore. You know, that's like the first, of course, the, you know, Mario has his origins as a character in the first Donkey Kong game, where Donkey Kong is the, I mean, he's the one who has, it's King Kong, right? Where King Kong has the blonde girl at the top of the skyscraper, and you're the pot-bellied, middle-aged Italian plumber jumping over, or not, I don't think you're a plumber yet. You're just a guy.
Jumpman. You freshly jump.
Jumpman, yes. Jumping over.
Actually, if you want the, oh God, I'm sorry to do this. His profession in that he is the circus tamer. He is the gorilla. Wow, is
I didn't
his.
Know that.
I'm okay. Sorry. I didn't know
that's amazing that you know that. Sefaku. No, I'm genuinely impressed.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, that's why he's wearing white. Except Grand the Showman. He's like he's a showman. You know, he's like which also doesn't make sense because that's not a like the I'm the gorilla tamer at the circus is not a job, but
yeah. Also, why would you be wearing your circus clothes on this rescue mission?
But
anyway, so yes, Mario is jumping over the barrels and rescuing the princess from Donkey Kong in the first in his debut, and then I think it was the arcade game Mario Brothers, not Super Mario Brothers yet, where Mario and Luigi are removing assorted vermin from the New York City sewers. There's a Jew joke there, but I won't. It's not quite at the. It's not fully formed, and the interesting thing I guess is these video game franchises completely diverged for most of their history. I mean, apart from that, from the original Donkey Kong, and it's I think it had a sequel in the arcades. Certainly the visual design of Donkey Kong and the characters and all of that comes from the Donkey Kong Country series. As a Super Nintendo thing, which is great, and I love it, and we could talk about it maybe another time. I'm a huge fan. I loved all those games growing up, but these cinematic universes seem to have been reunited in this film, there was also it was a funny kind of thing.
They've also like. They have done crossover stuff constantly, like Smash Brothers and the Olympic Games.
Smash Brothers, big Nintendo Cinematic Universe is the Zelda Cinematic Universe, which is a different cinematic universe. And I have to imagine maybe as like an Easter egg, but it would be weird if Link showed up in the sequel, right? Or Zelda or whatever, or Ganon. Like that's a different cinematic universe. Smash Brothers is not. I don't think that's
I said the wrong thing. But basically, like the Mario Tennis and the Mario Kart, there's like the Mario crossover, the golf and the Mario Party.
Is Link a character? I don't think Link's a character.
No, but Donkey Kong is. Like I'm saying,
I see what you mean.
Donkey Kong is a Mario character at this point.
Yes, and has been for some time. But there was a long period, at least of a decade or more, like basically from. I think it was 1992 or something was the first Donkey Kong Country through the early 2000s. Donkey Kong was definitely not on the roster of Mario Kart 64. And I didn't play the Mario Karts really for GameCube or Wii, so I'd have to double check. I might have been DLC like at some point in the Wii thing, but I don't think he was in the GameCube either. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. I get what you're saying. It's certainly they've been integrated for a while. And the big touchstone for me recently, I didn't play on release, but was playing with Siege Baby in the lead up to the film was the Mario and the Rabbids XCOM game for the Switch. And interestingly, Donkey Kong is not in the main campaign, but he is in the DLC. The DLC campaign is a Donkey Kong campaign and it's like taking place on Donkey Kong Island in the Mario Rabbids cinematic universe which is funny but it was I think it works overall it definitely adds the variety to what it would otherwise be like a three note, you know, mushrooms, pipes, and shells. Like that, you know, now we also have gorillas and bananas. So whatever.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I think you could have done, you didn't need to do the Donkey Kong. You could have, there's enough like variety and characters. Like there's a whole like cast of, you know, guys that only get like a one note thing, or enemies in this that only get like a one note that could have been characters. You could have done like a, you could have done a lot of things in the movie. I'm sure Donkey Kong, I think, lets you bring in. I don't know. I didn't find that like Donkey Kong to be a pivotal part of the narrative. And I think in the end, it didn't even matter. Like in the end, only Donkey Kong even mattered, right? Like the.
Well, the big climactic fight takes place in Brooklyn, and Donkey Kong, as I recall, is not in it. He stays back in Mushroom World.
Donkey Kong is. I guess he provides, I mean, narratively, and I'm analyzing this way too hard, and I apologize.
No, it's, but I mean, no,
he provides a alternate protagonist that is somebody who's like Mario's equal, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
it is clear that Donkey Kong is also a protagonist. Like, there is something in this universe, in the universe of Mushroom Kingdom, that is like, you know, plot armor or protagonist powers that Donkey Kong also has. And he kind of provides a foil for Mario, and that, like, he's only Mario is somehow, you know, like the most important person in the universe, and Donkey Kong is like the most important person of a adjacent universe or adjacent kingdom.
No, it's in the same universe. Well, in a kingdom within that universe.
Like there is, in theory, like this is like in the Mario mythology. In the
mythology, yes.
He good way Donkey Kong plays Hercules when he's an Argonaut, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Mario is Jason. Yes. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe Mario is Hercules and yeah, but I get, well, it doesn't exactly work, but I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. He's like, you know, there are multiple hero protagonists in this mythological thing. And that's probably, I don't want to, again, it's a kid's movie that's not intended to make sense. You know, it's got a bunch of funny gags. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the gags. I really enjoyed the Jack Black bits, also, both because Jack Black is funny and good at what he does, and because that was like really, I think, the only points at which the script kind of made artistic sense, but in a really kind of, I would even say profound. I mean, that portrayal of, you know, unrequited love on the part of this kind of violent sociopath who really just wants to be loved and doesn't know how, and you know, wants to possess this beauty, but repels her kind of with his very existence, but is also really sensitive. And you can almost see the kind of beginnings of a redemption arc, maybe potentially. Yeah, I think that all works, but it's like 5 minutes out of the thing. And if it were more than that, it would be, oh my God. But for those like 5 minutes, and I think overall as product, I certainly enjoyed consuming this product and am, I don't know about excited, but I anticipate enjoying next Mario cinematic product personally.
I do. And I guess like, I don't know how you could like fag it up.
Like, yeah. No, there's really no space.
Unless that's, you're going to say like Donkey Kong's the new hero and it's because he's a black guy. It's like, all right, like I guess we're doing that. Like, but we're not doing that, because that's of course retarded.
I anticipate it could be, they could make it probably. I could see them doing a more Donkey Kong focused movie, and I could see certain quarters being like, see, he's a stand-in for the black community, whatever. But that's
just like the ape land is Wakanda.
Yeah. Right, like it's like Michelle Obama. Like, you're not allowed to compare her to Donkey Kong, right? You know, or something. Like, yeah, it's what are you even saying at that point?
But like, everyone in Mario is like, the source material is like just very white. Like, there's no like, I don't even know how you could. I don't know. You couldn't. I don't think there'd be too many of these. I'm sure these things are like a.
There may be another one or two. Like, yeah, they're not over the next like 10 years, you know, decade, whatever. Yeah, like they're also, not like, going to be.
I don't know why this movie was actually made. Like, Looking at like from a money perspective, like why don't you just make another what is it, the Despicable Me movie? Like you can make those right. forever. Make another million. Because it's these are literally for babies. Like
right.
Like Despicable Me movies are for infants. Like they're not. You're not gonna tell me that like you know a new generation of or why don't they make like a Bluey movie or like some kind of like I find it weird to want to use Mario. I guess this thing made like $1 billion.
It made it absurd. I haven't checked the totals. It made retarded amounts of money, which is good. I guess, you know.
But like these things again, animated kids movies are basically sure bets. You know.
Yes,
like,
but this one did better by a lot than the Mode Nigga animated kids movie, and I think a large part of that, I'm not saying like our you know the white race is going to be saved because the Mario movie made a lot of money, but it is an encouraging.
It made $1 billion.
Exactly, literally $1 billion, right? And the thing is, a large part of that is precisely because there's so much gay shit and black shit and just Jewish shit. Like all the rest of everything is just total shit, and not in like a kind of funny, self-knowing way that has Jack Black like making jokes. It's just stupid and gay and awful, and this isn't. And people are responding to that. And I think that's a good, I don't know if it's the only way in which you could interpret that as a bad thing is if you want to be a total accelerationist about like, you know, if as long as people have product that doesn't totally suck, then things won't get better, which I can appreciate that as an argument. I don't even know if I disagree necessarily, but I think it does definitely, it is the fact that this movie made $1 billion. It was such a kind of just a runaway hit, shows that yeah, there's an open market. There's a open space for anyone who wants to make children's entertainment that isn't gay. And so the fact that pretty much everything else is gay is a deliberate decision. And yeah, all the, you know, usual critiques along those lines.
Yeah. I'm actually trying to compare it. Cause I do this thing whenever a movie gets released internationally to see how successful it is. I compare its gross to in Japan to top anime movies. Cause it's kind of a secret. I would compare it to Spirited Away because anime in Japan isn't actually that popular relative to what you would think. This is not a dumb joke. Like box office wise, they tend not to do too well. And the Mario made $10 billion, ¥10 billion in the box office in Japan. And I want to double check against Spirited Away's Japanese box office because it's relatively common, like a popular like
yeah, Western Miyazaki movie movies will do well. Maybe produce. Not just like yeah.
No, they
yeah.
do well, but even so, like I can't find it in yen.
It don't matter.
I'm sure it did good.
I'm sure. Not, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So I don't know if there's or is that a. Do you want to wrap it there? I think that's probably enough.
Yeah. I think we. I mean, what is? Did we miss anything like major? No, I don't think so.
I can't think of anything. I mean, other than like what maybe Toad is a little. They're doing this funny. Toad is like an Asian caricature, which I found kind of funny. Like the character Toad. There's like other Toads that are not, but the Toad that's the Toad that's the same as all the other Toads, except for this one has like a fighting bow staff and does kind of slanty eyed bits a little bit. It's sort of interesting.
They're also like making it's yeah, they're like I was they I think it was all just a misdirection for like a very kind of it's a very Jap I'm surprised because it's maybe it's a very Japanese or Chinese misdirection where they're like are they the two Odyssey of the West? Because like they meet him.
Yes,
they meet, right. Mario meets Toad, and they're
yes.
They're just like a huge fake. Like, hey, we're doing Odyssey of the West. Like, I can't. You know, the Japanese and their Odyssey, which might be a relic of like a previous script that was more like Odyssey of the West. Like, you know, I could see a American writer being like, oh, well, if we're trying to sell it to Nintendo, we'll tell them it's going to be Odyssey of the West. But obviously that's not what happened. So maybe it's a relic of that, but it would have been very funny if, you know, that's what they ended up doing.
And they might in a sequel or something. We'll see.
Yeah.
But anyway, All right. Yeah, that's I think all I had and don't, again, it's not the kind of thing that we would now spend what, like almost an hour handling. That just feels a little inherently ridiculous. But I think there's other stuff, you know, we mostly didn't talk about just this silly kids movie. I think it's the things around it.
I could say this, we had you this episode because DK hasn't played Atomic Heart yet. That's why we're
yes, that is true. I am remiss in my record. I've been actually playing. Oh, that was the one last thing, and then we'll finish with this. That was the one last thing I did want to say is I've been playing some of the Mario games with Siege Baby, who's now like starting to get old enough to, and he's just actually he's like fucking lost his mind over Mario, and we had a birthday party, and at the we were going to the party city, and all the Mario inventory was completely cleared out. It's the new hotness among kids in a way that it really, I don't know that it ever was. It's a kind of media property now in a way that, yes, Mario has always been popular with schoolboys, of course. At least ones that, you know, the preceding 30 years. But now it's like a complete, at the current moment, it's hot in a way that, I mean, it's kind of all he wants, to the point where Mrs. DK has been somewhat annoyed because Siege Baby just wants to talk about Mario, and you know, today Mario jumped on the head of Bowser Jr. three times, and Bowser Jr. had to go away, and this was very exciting. And Mrs. DK is like, what are you like, what? Take care, everybody.